Alright, Counterwave listeners, it's November. You're probably already smelling the pumpkin spice and bracing for that one uncle's political takes. And it all centers on Thanksgiving. That classic American image of pilgrims and the Wampanoag tribe sitting down, holding hands, and sharing a perfectly roasted turkey.
Yeah, more likely a goose or maybe even a pigeon or a swan. But hey, it's a beautiful story, no? Wholesome, heartwarming, and great for elementary school pageants.
And it's almost entirely a myth. Not that a meal didn't happen, but why it happened and what it meant is the part that gets, let's say, manipulated.
Let's set the real stage for 1621. The pilgrims didn't land in some pristine wilderness. They landed at a Wampanoag village called Patuxet, which was empty because, and this is the key, almost everyone was dead.
Between 1616 and 1619, a massive epidemic from earlier European ships ripped through coastal New England. It wiped out, by some estimates, 90% of the indigenous population in that specific area.
90%. Just sit with that number. It's apocalyptic.
So the Wampanoag leader, Osamaquin, who the English called Massasoit or Massasoit, or Massa something, because they were the English and not very good with native names, isn't operating from a place of, gee, let's welcome these new neighbors. He's a leader who just lost most of his people and is terrified of his rivals, the Narragansett tribe, who weren't hit as hard by the plague.
Osamaquin sees these pilgrims with their guns and barely surviving the winter, and he doesn't see friends. He sees a potential, a desperate, and a heavily armed ally, and he needs muscle.
And what about the friendly Indian translator, Squanto? His story is even more heartbreaking. His real name was Tisquantum, and he was from that empty village of Patuxet.
He'd been kidnapped by an English captain years earlier, sold into slavery in Spain. Then he escaped, made his way to London, where he then learned English, and then he finally got a ride back home, only to find his entire family, his entire world gone, wiped out.
He was, quite literally, the last of his people. When he helped the pilgrims, it wasn't just a friendly gesture. It was his only option for survival. He was a man with no home, caught between two worlds, working for the people, living on top of his family's graves.
So that famous first Thanksgiving in 1621, it wasn't a planned potluck. The pilgrim accounts actually say they were celebrating their first decent harvest by firing their guns in celebration. How much more America can it get?
Osamaquin hears the shots and shows up with 90 armed warriors. He's probably thinking, are we being attacked or is this an invitation by the pale weirdos? What do?
Exactly. It turns into a 3-day diplomatic summit. It was Osamaquin sizing up his new and somewhat weird potential mercenaries. And that's when the Wampanoag men went out and brought back 5 deer, providing the bulk of the food for those assembled.
It was less pass the stuffing and more, please don't kill us. And also, will you help us kill our enemies?
And the menu? Forget the one you're planning. There was no pumpkin pie, no flour, no ovens. No cranberry sauce. They had cranberries, but no sugar. No potatoes. It was deer, wild birds, corn, shellfish, squash. That was about it.
Oh, and the peace that followed? That is the other part of the myth. Although it lasted almost 50 years, it was fraught with tension and ended horribly. Osamaquin's own son, Metacomet, who the English called King Philip because, you know, they have that royal connection there, He ended up leading King Philip's War, one of the deadliest and most brutal wars in American history, against the colonists.
So, why the myth? Why the hand-traced turkeys and the buckled hats and shoes? Because the real story is a messy, dark, and complicated one. The comfy myth we have, that was manufactured much later.
Bingo. For that, you fast forward over 200 years. The 1621 event was totally forgotten until an 1840s magazine editor, Sarah Josepha Hale, who, fun fact, also wrote Mary Had a Little Lamb, decided America needed a unifying national holiday.
And in 1863, smack in the middle of the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln made it official. Because he needed a story, piece of national propaganda, really, to help unify a violently divided country. What better story than a whitewashed image of the nation's founding where everyone just got along?
So when we sit down at that table, what we're really celebrating is a 19th century marketing campaign designed to paper over a complex story of plague, desperation, and calculated politics.
Look, this isn't about canceling Thanksgiving. Enjoy the food, see your family, but as always, we want you to cut through the noise.
Knowing the real story, one of survival, a refugee translator, and a desperate political alliance is a lot more real, a lot more compelling, and a hell of a lot more American than the story that we recite almost like a marketing slogan.
This year, we're glad we took the time to share it here. More Counterwave after this. So, anyway, who's been up to what? It's interesting because we have 2 weeks between episodes now, so stuff happens and things go on and we have stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
So, I've been off in crazy webland dealing with the website and all of that stuff. Thanks to everybody out there who followed and shared and liked and jumped on our webpage. It really makes a difference and it all counts. So thank you so much. Please keep hitting the buttons. Please keep whacking the share and the like and the follow and everything else and get the word out there.
What he said. Yeah.
Oh, so what are you guys doing for the holidays? Are we all going to be in the same place this year? Is that just me?
Yes, I think we are, I hope.
I think we are. Yeah. I think that's a good thing. I think it's family bonding.
I've been busy cleaning the ugly, nasty house that I've ignored because I've been devoting so much time to this podcast and my screenplay. I've been busy shopping, planning the menu, and trying to contact all the people who thought this was going to be a 3-day event.
No, so let's get into this discussion, guys. And the more we talk about it and the more we talk during our prep for this, I keep playing with this idea of this modern myth that we have and why this is still the version that we cling to. Who benefits from the Pilgrims and Indians were besties narrative? Is this a national identity thing? Did we use it back in those days to justify expansion? Does this one make history more comfortable for the kiddies? Or is it all just about marketing and capitalism? Or is it some blend of all of that? What do you guys think?
I think it's a blend, and I think also added in there is the, I don't know if this is the right words for it, but the forced assimilation of Native Americans.
I think there's an inherent message that evolved out of it, I think you're right, from unity and togetherness and brotherhood. I think we evolved this message of now we're going to unity and togetherness and brotherhood you into us.
And we're going to do it across an entire continent. So sit tight.
Yep.
Because we're coming.
I do think you're right. I do think it's a blend. But I think from my perspective, over the last 10 or 15 years, that blend, the percentage, the amount of capitalism and marketing in that blend has steadily gone up.
Listen, back in 1939, businesses were pressuring Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Why? Because that particular year, November had 5 Thursdays, and that 5th Thursday came smack at the end of the month.
Oof.
And they thought that didn't leave them enough time to make money between Thanksgiving and Christmas. They pressured him to move the holiday up to the third Thursday of the month so that they would have the extra couple of weeks to make money. And he appeased them. It only lasted 2 years because there was a general revolt in terms of day we should celebrate the holiday. But that's the kind of power marketing and business had even 70, 80 years ago.
And we can't forget that capitalism, when it comes to Thanksgiving, also gave us Black Friday.
Oh, yeah.
Sweet Jesus. Yeah.
And Black Friday now has evolved into this thing that is actually on my holiday calendar on Google. It's terrifying.
I know, I don't like it. And Cyber Monday. I don't know if you guys have Cyber Monday on yours, but I do.
Oh, I do. And I have something special planned for Cyber Monday, actually. Cyber Monday is going to be a newsletter day for us. So we're going to talk Cyber Monday, commercialism, and all that stuff right after Thanksgiving in that one.
But that's a big thing because we have this myth of Thanksgiving now that's a holiday, and it's almost like you really can't think of Thanksgiving without Black Friday, too. Stores will open midnight on Thanksgiving.
Some stores are open on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, or they'll open later. It's crazy. I remember when I was younger, so in the early 2000s, Thanksgiving still was more, I feel like the meaning was more focused on togetherness, being with your family, sharing a meal. And I feel like I watched the capitalism in it skyrocket.
Oh, absolutely.
Where
last
now it's
decade,
like
decade and
Thanksgiving.
A half, absolutely there, Bobby Socks.
Yeah. So it became this gross capitalist amalgamation, Thanksgiving, Black Friday, Christmas.
Yep.
Now, I have staged for the past at least four decades one-man protest against Black Friday by not shopping unless it was something my life depended upon. Do I need toilet paper? All right, you bastards, I'll go buy some. That's about where it starts and ends for me.
Black Friday is a day to sleep in for me for the same damn reason. I'm just not going to support this, especially the way they've been abusing their employees to be open on Thanksgiving and to be there at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
Black Friday, I'm not going to support this.
Not to mention the absolute unnecessary violence of stampedes and fighting over fucking
the last
shit,
toy, like the last Blu-ray player, the last TV, the last computer, the last
fighting over possessions.
Yeah,
it's gross. So with this myth, we really have some of the original fake news that Bill touched on earlier. So really connect it. How is Lincoln's 1863 proclamation any different from a modern president using a feel-good story to distract from a crisis or unify a base?
It is the same thing. It absolutely is the same thing. It is a high-level or an executive-level narrative peddled on us to unify the public into a single standardized myth that makes us conform and behave.
Yeah. It's like another myth that was made to, I don't know, sound sweeter for history that comes to mind immediately is that George Washington had wooden teeth.
Yeah, not so much wooden, not so much his either.
No,
I'm just going to say that man had slaves' teeth in his mouth.
Yeah.
For those who didn't know.
Yeah,
which
had them ripped
probably lasted longer than wooden teeth, but whatever.
Yep.
Listen, I've watched this go on through history. I'm going to cut Lincoln a bit of slack here, because a nation at literal war with itself is a nearly unprecedented catastrophe and a situation where the phrase by all means necessary should be taken quite literally.
We're a country that's really good at softening our brutal history to have people swallow it down and have little happy plays.
We are the original spin doctors. Having gone there, what about the good versus the real? Can we or should we try to separate the modern holiday, which is all about family, gratitude, food, from its really kind of dark origins? Or is that just continuing the whitewash? How do we handle this with our own families without being that guy at the table?
I think at least personally for me, because I understand the togetherness of the modern Thanksgiving. But I try to keep in mind that while us white people, us non-native people, have Thanksgiving, that is also a day of mourning for Indigenous people. And I personally try to just keep those two things in my mind at the same time.
Same.
It is about togetherness, but it is also a day of mourning.
Thanksgiving is bittersweet for me because it is about the traditions we've created as a culture, family, togetherness, peace. But it is also about the horrible expansionist reality of this country's early days.
My feeling is that we as individuals do not need to feel compelled to compartmentalize the realities. However, we are also not compelled to infuse them into the dinner conversation. Each one of us seeks out our own personal level of knowledge and education. As for myself, in most cases, and especially during the holidays, I would rather be happy than be right.
I do have one thing that I'll do. If I'm at a Thanksgiving event, I don't care if it is a child or a fully grown adult, I no longer will be in the presence of people who refer to Native Americans as Indians. I will correct them, even if it starts a fight.
Some fights,
that's
fine.
That's fine. That's fine.
That's my one thing that I'll be like, no, especially not today. In general, I will correct people, but on Thanksgiving, I don't care if it's family and it starts an argument. That's very important to me as a person. They are Native Americans or Indigenous people. They are not fucking Indians.
And that is
Christopher Columbus.
That is absolutely fine, but I am not going to carve the turkey, set it out on the table and say, so, do any of you know the real story of Thanksgiving?
And that's fair.
I'm the type that would do that.
Well, you're a dick.
I try.
But all of this is a perfect example of what's at the center of critical race theory in today's education wars and this whole debate. The conflict isn't about hating America. It's about whether we tell the convenient story, like Lincoln's myth, or the complex one, Osama Quinn's political gamble, Anto's tragedy, and Metacomet's war.
For me, there is a reason that we teach our children counting and arithmetic before we confound them with differential calculus. The simple, the sanitized version should be a jumping off point, with the uglier details layered on incrementally as their education progresses. But the more we watch the current powers that be edit the curriculum for further education, the more we need to be concerned that we are erasing history from the minds of our own population.
Absolutely, because at the rate we're going, within 2 years, Thanksgiving is going to be the celebration of trad wives serving their husbands on the day of gratefulness.
You're not wrong. And with what you said, Bill, I see what you're saying, but I'm thinking about what I was taught as a kid, and I'm just, there's a way to tell the real story, even to young kids, without it being horrifying in the beginning. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I was in like third grade when they started telling us about the Holocaust.
Right.
That's something awful and devastating, and they don't give you everything in the beginning because you're in third grade.
It's a bad approach.
But they don't tell you there's not a sanitized version. There's not a whitewash. There is.
Yeah, there is.
The
American education system.
It's about approach.
It's about approach.
How you deliver it.
Yeah.
And if you look at even just within this episode that we're doing today, when we did the intro, we did our intro dialogue for effect. And that is one approach. And we wanted to hit hard. We wanted people to have feelings about it. And we wanted people to really think about the actual history of it. So that's what. You don't do that with a four-year-old.
Right.
So you have to vary your approach. And as Bill said,
yeah,
as someone's education progresses, there's a subtext there. So does their age. They become more capable of understanding more of the truth until you have the ultimate full reveal.
One last comment. Mm-hmm. I think at least in my generation, a step forward, and it's a small one, but it's a step, is that the textbooks don't say Indians and Pilgrims anymore.
Yeah.
They do say Natives and Pilgrims.
Yeah.
And honestly,
that's fair.
When I was in elementary school, they still said Indians. Yeah. So we've made a step.
So that's the reality. The history books, or at least the ones they haven't banned yet, don't exactly paint the rosy picture we were sold in elementary school. It's complex, it's heavy, and it's important to sit with that discomfort.
But here's the thing about being a critical thinker in America. You have to be able to multitask. You have to be able to deconstruct colonial narratives and make sure the mashed potatoes don't turn into glue at the same time. We can hold space for the hard truths of the past while still trying to survive the chaos of the present, specifically the chaos of feeding 12 people in a tiny kitchen.
We can't fix the history today, but we can fix the menu. To help us navigate the thorough dynamics of Thursday without losing our minds, here's Turbo with Turbo's time-tested turkey tips.
Okay, all right, cut the track. That is terrifying.
Sounds like a barnyard rave gone wrong, or maybe a barnyard orgy gone right.
Honestly, it's kind of a bop. I'd listen to that working out, if I worked out. Anyway.
Moving on. We've talked history, we've talked politics, but now we have to talk holiday survival. To guide us through the minefield of dry meat and family tension, here is the man who claims he can fix Thanksgiving with chemistry and physics.
Turbo comes to us with a multifaceted background in the arts and sciences, and one of those facets is the culinary arts and sciences. He is, as it turns out, also a trained chef. Imagine that.
What is up, Counterwave crew? Look, I know the deal. You're stressed, you're dealing with that moment when your Aunt Beatrice asks you why you haven't settled down yet.
Or when your cousin tries to explain crypto to your grandmother.
Exactly. I can't fix the crypto bros, but I can fix the bird. Because let's be real, traditionally, cooked turkey is garbage. It's dry, it's sad, and it tastes like cardboard that's been thinking about rosemary. Here's how we break that cycle.
Okay, hit me. Where do we start?
All right, first, stop roasting the whole bird, especially if you're putting that spine straight down on the pan. That's the big poultry propaganda. It sucks all of those juices out, and that's why you get that big, inch-thick layer of gelatin in the fridge once you throw it in there. Let's be real now. So, it looks nice for 5 seconds on Instagram and on the table, but as soon as you cut into it, it is drier than shoe leather, my friends. We need to do the wonderful method of spatchcocking it.
I don't think you can say that here.
Grow up, Bill. Spatchcocking. You take a pair of kitchen shears and you cut the backbone right out of that bird, flatten it out, and then you hold up that spine like a trophy.
That sounds incredibly aggressive. Is this cooking or Krav Maga?
It's necessary and a healthy holiday season tradition to get out all of that holiday time aggression. Remember Aunt Beatrice from before? So, not only does it set the vibe, it looks like the turkey's doing this crazy yoga pose. It truly looks like you're trying to do something avant-garde. And the win. You cut your cooking time in half. By flattening that thing out, you remove a whole bunch of negative space that you gotta heat up and cook through. Cooks in about half the time and keeps those juices nice and locked in. Nobody's giving you a medal for being a martyr for waking up. We're tired of that. It's 2025. We all skip the parade, go straight to beer and football.
I do like the idea of sleeping in. I'm sold. Radicalize the bird.
Second tip. If you see any sort of wet brining in a turkey in a bucket, I'm calling the cops on you and pouring bleach in your food. You want to know why? Because nobody's going to eat it.
Is it really that bad?
Do the words salmonella jacuzzi sound that bad to you? Because that's exactly what you're going to be carrying, Niels. A heavy bucket of nasty salmonella that will spill and splotch and get all over your house like those horrifying Clorox commercials that only play at 2 in the morning. And you know what the result is? Just a bunch of sad, flavorless, watery meat that has just that horrible stringy texture that clings just in the back of your throat. That disdain for Beatrice is growing. And you gotta choke it down with tears of pain, because if you show that one side of weakness, all of those older relatives will just see that as an opportunity to pounce on you like a leopard at a watering hole.
Salmonella Jacuzzi is absolutely the name of my new punk band.
Don't do it. Dry brine that frickin' bird. I know. It sounds very counterintuitive how making a bird drier will make it more moist once it hits your mouth. It's the power of salt, baby. So the fix for this. 2 days before, you salt that thing like you were salting the earth. Full Conan the Barbarian, full Frank Frazetta, epic fantasy soundtrack. Salting of the earth. And then you leave that open, exposed to the air in the fridge for 2 days.
And use kosher salt. Do not use Morton iodized table salt.
That is correct, Bill. Iodized salt will not actually dissolve into water because it is bonded with that iodine in there. So you want to use a rock salt or a kosher salt or a sea salt because that will be able to actually do the osmosis here on that and not be blocked by that iodine. And since we're on the topic of things that look cute but are secretly terrible and probably carrying some sort of ancient, unspeakable disease, I just have to say it. Koalas are garbage.
Wait, what? They're one of the cutest goddamn animals on the planet.
They are a PR disaster. They look like fuzzy, drunk toddlers, but are absolutely the worst animals. They're not bears, by the way. They're marsupials, and they're miserable. Why? Because the only thing they can eat is eucalyptus. Fucking eucalyptus. And that's potpourri, and they can't even digest it. They have to ferment it in their stomach to be able to even eat it. It's ridiculous.
Isn't that part of their charm, though?
Charm? No. Absolutely not. Eucalyptus is basically poison, so the koala's entire life is spent in a perpetually toxic high, half-awake stupor, just trying to roam around and digest the few leaves that aren't actively toxic to them. They have brains the size of a walnut without any wrinkles in it, and they can't even figure out how to eat the leaves that have fallen off the branch. They would literally starve if the leaves aren't right in front of them, stuck on a stem still on the tree. They're dumb, smelly, and riddled with chlamydia. They are the living embodiment of choosing comfort over critical thought.
This is quite the pivot. I'm not sure where to file that or where it fits into all this, but I feel like I just learned something deeply disturbing.
So just remember, cuteness is not a substitute for an effective survival strategy. Now back to the sides. Alright. Alright, kids. Third tip. Stop using chicken stock for everything. Imagine this. Your friend brings over their new vegan partner. Or your nephew suddenly has moral objections to eating anything with a face. If you put chicken stock in the stuffing and the potatoes, they are eating air.
There's nothing sadder than watching the vegetarians eat a dinner roll and 3 stalks of celery.
Exactly. It's pretty bad diplomacy. So here's some alternatives. Use a high-end veggie stock or mushroom broth. It's got just as much umami, just a bunch of rounder flavors, and it's an available option to everybody, and nobody's gonna know the difference. Be a good host. Finally, and this is the hardest part, when the turkey comes out of the oven, you have to filibuster.
Stall for time?
Exactly. Do not touch that bird for 30 to 40 minutes. I don't care if your family is banging on the table with forks like it's a prison riot, and they're looking at you in that funny way.
That's 40 minutes of unstructured time for my uncle to start talking about the election, or chemtrails, or buying Greenland.
Distract them with appetizers and booze. Look, if you cut into that hot bird, that juice runs out, and then you will once again have that shoe leather jerky turkey. That meat needs to relax like it's having a spa day for a little bit and let those juices redistribute. Think of the turkey like a cable news pundit. It's hot, it's pressurized, and if you cut into it too early, it's just going to make a mess. Let it cool down, it'll be much more palatable.
I'm honestly scared to try the backbone removal, but I trust science, and it's worked out well for many politicians and a few billionaires.
Channel your frustration from the news cycle into those scissors, Niels. It's very therapeutic. Happy eating, everybody.
Welcome back to Counterwave Radio. It's Monday, and we are officially in the home stretch before Thanksgiving. The grocery lists are getting aggressive. The travel plans are locked in, and your email inbox is about to become a war zone of pre-Black Friday doorbusters.
You said it, Niels. It used to be a long weekend after a day of thanks. Now the entire week is just one long corporate-sponsored runway to Friday morning desperation. We're seeing sales start on Wednesday now. The sheer audacity of making a holiday about gratitude a prelude to a capitalist frenzy.
It's not enough we start Christmas in October. Now we have to do this capitalist frenzy buying madness for an entire week. I have refused to celebrate Black Friday since its inception. I got better things to do on my day off, but it's become the official American transition from grace to grab. It's really supposed to be a day of rest, but somehow we're collectively groomed this week to trade a full night's sleep and a peaceful night for the chance to save, what, maybe $50? On something we probably didn't need 10 minutes ago.
And that's the topic for the segment. Black Friday's Black Magic, your pre-Thanksgiving self-care warning. Look, we're not here to preach against saving money, but we want to talk about how this whole event is engineered, starting right now, to make you forget the fundamental rule of the long weekend. You need to rest.
Let's hit the facts, people. Because this is all based on psychology, not genuine scarcity. Retailers and marketers are geniuses at creating the fear of missing out, or FOMO. They're starting the countdown clocks today. The early access emails, the VIP pre-sales, they all hit you with an ultimatum.
Exactly. As research from consumer psychologists points out, Black Friday isn't about clearing out old inventory anymore. It's about driving impulse buying through artificial urgency. As a matter of fact, the National Retail Federation reported that a massive chunk of all holiday spending is done in that single weekend. We're talking billions. And a lot of that is stuff we didn't plan for until we saw that flashing red sale banner.
You know what I do in my inbox every morning when I check it? If it says anything about sale or anything about Black Friday, or anything about, oh, you gotta, delete. Gone. You're gone. You're out of here. You're done. The biggest lie of the holiday is the door buster. You think you're a savvy shopper getting a deal. But what you really are is a highly motivated test subject responding perfectly to a corporate psychological trigger. That coffee maker, you bought at 3:30 a.m. a few years ago? It was marginally faster, yeah, but the real cost was your sleep, your Saturday morning peace, and the 4 hours you spent trying to assemble the damn thing. Really? Not flipping worth it.
And think about what that does to your brain this week. You're trying to focus on cooking, family, travel. And the retailers are forcing your brain into a survival mode of acquisition. It's stressful. It drains you. That is the literal opposite of self-care. We're here to give you the mental armor you need to survive.
So, here is our counterwave advice. It's the simple, soft, liberal, fact-based guide to maintaining your chill and preserving your sanity. We call it the 3 R's of Black Friday prep. So, let's get to the first R, rethink, and starting today. We want you to make a list today, not of things to buy, but of things you are committed to not doing. It's fine if that list is in your head. You don't need to pull out a scrap of paper and write it down, but for some of us, it'd be a great idea to do so and pin it to the wall for the next week. Some of those things you should not be doing: maybe not checking email from 5 p.m. Thursday to 10 a.m. Friday. Not opening shopping apps during that same period. And if you do see a potential purchase, ask yourself 2 simple questions. Do I really need this on Monday? And does this purchase bring me joy or just temporary relief from the fear of missing out? If the answer to the first is no, delete the email.
Personally, I don't even bother with the self-questioning. I just delete the flipping email. I have boycotted Black Friday from its inception, and I will continue to avoid it until its ultimate demise. God willing, that comes sooner rather than later. Here's a practical tip for your digital self-care. Go into your email settings right now and set a rule to send all emails with the words Black Friday, Doorbuster, or Sale Ends straight into a folder you only check next Tuesday. Seriously, give yourself a digital bubble of sanity this week.
And the second R, restore. Now this one's mandatory. This is the self-care part. That long weekend is a precious, finite resource. You've earned it. Instead of dedicating your Friday to a shopping circuit, use that time to genuinely restore your energy. Read a book. Take a hike. Watch a movie that has absolutely no social redeeming value. The best thing you can acquire this weekend is an extra 4 hours of sleep. Commit to that restoration now.
Let's go back to the big picture for a second. This is about more than just your personal bank account or sleep cycle. This is about challenging a prevailing norm. Black Friday is a cultural construct that dictates that your worth is tied to your consumption. We reject that. In a free America, your worth is tied to your critical thought, your connection to your community, and your inner peace.
And that brings us to the third R, resource. And this one's about conscious spending. If you do have holiday shopping to do, and we know many of you do, dedicate a block of time later, maybe Saturday afternoon, and focus on independent businesses, local artists, and fair trade companies. You're still spending, but you're aligning your dollars with your values. You're supporting a better kind of economy than the one built on corporate stress-inducing tactics. Use this week to resource your intent, not your energy.
Absolutely. This Thanksgiving week, let's choose to savor the actual holiday and the time off, not the frantic acquisition period that immediately follows it. Give thanks for what you have, then take a nap. That transaction is self-care. It's not just consumption. And that is the kind of conversation we need to be having for a freer and more self-aware America.
The bottom line, counterwaivers, is this. Prep your defense now. Don't let the spin of the sale trick you into compromising your peace. Your energy, your rest, and your time with loved ones are more valuable than any discount. Take care of yourselves this week.
And that's our show. A huge thank you to everyone tuning in and sticking with us through the noise.
It's a lot of noise, Bill. A lot of noise.
But before we let you go, we want to talk about what's coming up next. Because, folks, we are officially entering the season.
Oh, here we go. The mandatory joy season. I've already seen 3 different jewelry commercials that imply if I really loved someone, I'd go into debt before New Year's.
That's exactly it. The tinsel is up, the pressure is on, and the ads are telling you that your family gathering needs to look like a perfectly curated, conflict-free Instagram post.
But what if it doesn't? What if the most wonderful time of the year actually just makes a lot of us feel stressed and maybe a little lonely?
On our next episode, we're doing a deep dive. That one's called Unboxing the Holiday: Capitalism, Loneliness, and the Myth of the Perfect Season.
We'll be shoveling through the fake snow. We're talking about how consumerism captured Christmas, and then Thanksgiving, and now basically all of November. We'll look at the massive pressure to perform happiness and why so many of us feel left out of the party.
It's time to have a real conversation about the holidays. The good, the bad, and the aggressively marketed.
You won't want to miss it. In the meantime, you can find us on all the socials at counterwaveradio.com or counterwave.link. Join the conversation. Do you love the holiday rush, or does it make you want to hide until January? We want to hear it from you.
And if you like the show, if you value conversations that challenge the script, do us a huge favor. If you listen on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please leave us a review. It genuinely helps us reach more people. And don't forget to follow, subscribe, and share in your favorite social media platforms.
For Nils and Bill, I'm Bobby Socks.
This is Counterwave Radio.
Keep thinking for yourself.